am Guðrún Dröfn Whitehead, and I am the host of this director's commentary.
And I am Þórarinn Eldjárn, the writer who wrote the original short story.
And I am Viðar Víkingsson, the director of this film.
So, in the beginning of the film, there is verbatim explanation of Tilbury from the stories of Jón Árnason. Can you explain to us why you decided to start the film this way?
Yes, because this is not something that we know from Hollywood. This is not about vampires or werewolf, where we know the rules. We know how a vampire is to be exterminated by a stake, how they come into being by biting each other. But here we have an Icelandic phenomenon called Tilbury, which is put into being by women. According to the legends, it was always women who produced produced a Tilbury in order to, because these were very hungry times. People were thinking of what to eat all the time. And then, of course, we had all these stories about sheep being stolen and milk being taken from cows of your neighbor. And so I found it necessary to explain at the beginning of the film how it comes into being, the Tilbury, and how you can put it to an end, or what happens if somebody finds out about what a Tilbury is.
So it's explaining the rules of the game of this particular type of monster.
Yes, and there we can see that this has sexual overtones.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that this is a woman who, in order to gain power, grows a penis or something like that, or grows a third breast, mm-hmm. which is rather astonishing in these innocent times.
Mm-hmm. It's significant that you have to go to mass 3 times and steal the church wine, I think, to make this animal into being.
Yes, yes it is. And there I'm trying to make a link between the wine and the water,
mm-hmm.
because holy water is what is among those things that you can fight the Tilbury with.
Isn't this an unlikely story to be made into a film?
Yes, I always thought so, because the story itself, when it first was published, it's in the form of that this character, Auðun, he is writing his memories many, many years later for a radio program, a competition on memories. So when Viðar told me he wanted to make it into a film, I thought it must be impossible. But of course, though the story is very straightforward and starts out from something which is only a play of words, Tilbury in Icelandic, Tilbury in English. But there are so many things in it that are, as we can see in the film,
mm-hmm.
Excellent to have as a base for so many things.
There are so many different connections that you can make, like Tilbury and World War II, for example. It's an unlikely but very interesting connection.
Yes. And also the story is set in 1940, when Iceland was occupied by the British. And in May 1940. And that was a very big thing in Icelandic history, because we can say that modern times came to Iceland then,
mm-hmm.
Iceland had been until then in many ways a very backward, very small country, small population, maybe somewhere between 100 and 150,000 people. All of a sudden we have there 40, 50, 60,000 British soldiers, and the country was occupied, but everyone got work. The Great Depression was over, modern times, and even though it was an occupation, everyone was really happy that it was the British, not the German, that came first to Iceland. The Germans had occupied Denmark and Norway, for instance.
And I think there's this pull between modern times and the country living and city living and all these kinds of things that are so visual in this film, visually represented in many ways. This kind of,
Yes, this character, Auðun, and also Guðrún, the priest's daughter, they are from this far out place in the West.
And Auðun sort of wants to stay there. He is a very reluctant participant in the beginning.
Yes, and when he is writing down his memories many, many years later, he regrets that he hadn't, his character wasn't strong enough to resist going to Reykjavik, mm-hmm. as everyone else.
I've heard that people that live on islands are more prone to believe in ghosts because they haven't got any neighbors. So they, people like in islands like Japan, Haiti, England, and Iceland, suddenly you have your neighbors in your country. The ghosts have arrived in a sense, mm-hmm. and that's what I was trying to convey in these scenes where he sees people from abroad, because Iceland up to that time had been very isolated, and suddenly you have modern times
in unexpected places like here.
Yeah. But then we have the work that the army brought with it, mm-hmm. but also they behave very curiously, the soldiers, very unlike the Icelandic farmers who knew nothing about discipline or stuff like that. All this seems like they really are alien to us, mm-hmm. these soldiers.
And they are very foreign to the landscape, like the Reykjavik landscape and this landscape. They look out of place to us. And suddenly Iceland was filled with these young, handsome men. They were polite. They were disciplined. This must have affected women in the country.
Yes, of course it did. As you can imagine, when we have so many young man all of a sudden coming to Iceland, and very soon people started talking about what is called in Icelandic ástandið, which means the situation. Mm-hmm. It was when Icelandic men started complaining about that the girls went with the British soldiers instead of being interested in ordinary Icelanders. And very soon this became something that all girls that were with the soldiers, they were almost considered as prostitutes.
They were betraying the country, really.
Yes.
And in this scene, you can, it speaks to this, right? Because he's saying, you're so undisciplined, you don't even know how to eat with a knife and fork. But the soldiers do.
Yes, exactly.
So there were these farmers, really, the Icelandic men, and the foreign soldiers were gentlemen.
Yes, and you must consider that there weren't that many foreigners in Iceland at that time. So it was all very, something very new and exciting, so it's really understandable.
Mm-hmm. And they brought things with them that we were not used to, stockings and chocolate and bubble gum and...
Yes, and then, as we will see later, the Americans took over this occupation and came to Iceland and took over from the British. And interestingly enough, this was before Pearl Harbor.
And then there we have a backstory in the form of a flashback. Auðun, the principal character, he has a memory of Guðrún as he used to be when they were both in the country, when he sort of idealized her. But now she has disappeared. She has maybe become something else. And this fact produces an inferiority complex in him. He has the impression that the girls know something more than him about love, about what's it's like to be a grown man, mm-hmm. which is often the case. The girls at the confirmation are often were more knowledgeable than the boys.
Yes, it's an interesting scene because they look so innocent. They have the white dresses.
Yeah.
They find the wine a little bit disgusting, but then they have these glances with each other.
Yes, and then they take him out to the barn,
mm-hmm.
and they pretend to know things that he doesn't know,
mm-hmm.
and you have the feeling that they are going to experiment on him about what it's like to be a man, mm-hmm. and he's very innocent. He doesn't know at all what's happening to him.
And Guðrún is wearing the same dress here as she is in the beginning when she's stealing the wine for her tilbury, isn't she?
Yes, she is. This also, yeah.
There's a direct connection with the past and the present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It connects to the confirmation,
mm-hmm.
and the wine and the sacrilege that is included in the making of tilbury.
And maybe a loss of innocence as well?
Yes, the guy, he is suffering from a kind of arrested development. When he grew up in the country, there were very few girls around, so he couldn't really grow up. And was very innocent.
And this is also true for Iceland at the time, because suddenly the whole country was filled with foreign young men, and Icelanders were very innocent of a lot of things that they brought as well, which this scene shows quite clearly, right?
Yes, he doesn't know what a condom is. He thinks it's chewing gum. He's always drinking milk, and of course the metaphor of the milk and butter goes through the film,
mm-hmm.
and it's all ties up with the tilbury theme, the tilbury that steals milk.
Mm-hmm. While the soldiers drink alcohol and they're more rough. And
yeah, and the guy who plays the sergeant there, he was a real sergeant in life. He was a Scotsman,
mm-hmm.
and I found him in Iceland, and you can see that he behaves like a real army corporal or sergeant.
I really like this scene where he crawls out of the hole and starts sniffing the milk.
Yeah, he was supposed to be a bit rat-like.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a sort of a human version of a tilbury. And the sort of costuming and the way that he's acting is, I think, very reflective of this idea of the tilbury in a very fun way.
Yeah, and everybody shows him great respect, which is explained later on that he is He is from the upper classes in England.
And him throwing the chocolate to him to have with the milk is also demonstrative of this, what we were saying about the innocence, where he is almost a child.
Yeah, and this is a milk chocolate as well.
Yeah. It's Cadbury's chocolate. It's hard to look at that now and not think of this.
Yeah, which will be replaced by Hershey's when the Americans come.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing, you little Eskimo fucking leper, you?
He calls him an Eskimo leper.
Yeah, this was something that the actor proposed, and since he was a real sergeant, I took his word for it that this is what a surgeon says to his soldiers, that they're always trying to humiliate them.
Mm-hmm. And calling an Icelander an Eskimo was perhaps also reflective of how they saw Icelanders at the time,
yeah,
as these backwater, strange people.
That's true.
This is the swimming coach.
Yeah, who's supposed to be somebody who likes the Germans more than the English, and the English suspect him of that.
Yeah, and you're shown a little bit more of that a little later on in the film.
And it also has historic connections, because that's exactly what the British did when they came to Iceland. All people who had some link with anything German were suspected.
And you see, she crosses the butter to make sure it's not Tilbury butter.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of milk products in this film throughout, which is connecting the theme.
And they're all, this is old time cuisine, they're eating dried fish and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is not modern or anglicized yet in Iceland.
Yeah, it's a real connection between the past and the present.
Yeah.
And these remnants of country living in the city, which are still there.
Yeah.
And this scene is also quite different from later on, when you see more the American base or the British base, that is. I think also the conversations and interactions between the soldiers and the Icelanders are interesting, because the soldiers always seem to be looking down on him in particular. And they don't take him very seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
So here is Guðrún.
Yeah, and this is filmed in a very Hollywood way, and like a Hollywood musical, very romanticized.
Is the location important? Is it important that this is taken in Sundhöllin, meaning the swimming palace in Reykjavík?
Yeah, this was a building that was very... the Icelanders were very proud of this building. Thorin.
Yeah, it was built and taken into use somewhere around 1930. So it was about 10 years old when this is supposed to happen. And this is still existing, one of the finest buildings in Reykjavík, and relates directly to the story, because these things are supposed to have happened right there.
Mm-hmm. And swimming and the swimming pools and the hot tubs in Iceland have a cultural and social function also.
Yes, about the same as the pubs in England.
This is where people meet and discuss current events and politics and...
Yes, and solve all the problems of the country.
Yeah. This all happens in a swimming pool. So it's fitting that he meets her there for the first time.
Yes, but at the same time, this is the water is a sort of symbol of the unconscious. There is an undercurrent in the water. You don't know what's beneath the water, which we shall see now in the scene that follows. Suddenly, we are no longer in the innocent swimming pool. We are in a place which could be a hot spring with a volcano beneath or something like that.
This is already a very unsettling scene because of the lights and the fog and him bobbing in the water.
And that was supposed to be Tilbury Butter that we saw there for a second.
Mm-hmm. With alcohol rather than milk next to it.
Yeah, and of course whiskey is symbolizing the occupying army.
Mm-hmm. Is this green milk that he's puking out?
Well, it was supposed to be Tilbury Butter. Mm-hmm. And the strange thing in it is that everybody, because he's an officer, the soldiers above think that this is perfectly normal and just a joke. Mm-hmm. And this is a kind of how they show their contempt for the Icelanders themselves. They can behave as they wish.
And nobody questions the commanding officer?
No. They just say he's a jolly good fellow.
Yes, he's quite eccentric. So this is where he starts stalking Guðrún to know where she is going. And this also relates to history, doesn't it?
Yes, it relates to the historic fact that the authorities got more and more worried about the girls associating with the soldiers and started spying on them to get a grip of the so-called ástand, the situation that girls were associated with the soldiers.
And the notes that were taken were quite extensive. I mean, the descriptions were quite extensive. And there were many people helping out to spy on these women and their families.
Yes.
And they wanted then to reform them in the end. Send them out into the country and sort of reform them into back into Icelandic society.
Yes, and then some people that said, what if we had all of a sudden had tens of thousands of girls in Iceland?
Yes, you come into that in your short story very succinctly. Would it have been any different? Probably not.
Yeah, that's the question.
So we are now at Hólavallagarður, the old cemetery in Reykjavík. Why is this a significant location?
Yes, Reykjavík is not an old city. It was most of it dates from the 20th century, but this cemetery has a special signification because this is where all the old poets are buried. And then, of course, a cemetery is a place where you go to bring up ghosts, to make a new ghost, like we now discover that is happening with Guðrún and Tilbury. Something is happening there that we don't really understand, but we get the feeling that she is feeding the Tilbury there. But then on the other side, it was common during the war that couples who had nowhere to go to make love, they went to the cemetery. So this is all mixed up.
And I mean, this cemetery is still used for partying and...
Yes.
All kinds of things.
Yes, that's true.
So it's still a significant social place, really. And it's a very confusing place as well. It's very easy to get lost there. There is no direct paths. They're all sort of mixed and matched. It's very hard to navigate. So his wandering around trying to find Guðrún feels very authentic to this location.
And there we see something happening and we don't know what it is. There is this...
This is a scare, jump scare moment.
But of course you have to go to the cemetery to get the necessary things for making a tilbury.
Yeah.
She has probably already made one, but maybe she is looking for spare parts, more ribs, more human ribs to make a new one.
Mm-hmm. Or perfecting this one, making him new. So is this a fake gravestone with a candle on or a real gravestone that was already there?
Oh, it's a fake one.
Guðrún mm-hmm. stood very clearly out in her red coat and that dress. She's very striking as a character.
Yes, yes, a bit. She represents modernity in a way, but also the striking ghost of yore.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the color red is the color of lust and love and all kinds of things.
Yeah, and hell too.
Of course, hell, fire. There's a war on. This is no joke. You should be ready. So here we continue the flashback.
Yes.
So Guðrún has a great effect on him continuously, even despite him seeing that something is wrong.
Yes, he represents everything he wonders about, but doesn't know what is about.
And he also has this mission to rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Which I suppose was the point of following them around and trying to rehabilitate them, to rescue them from themselves and the soldiers.
Kom eitthvað fyrir því?
Já, maður tekur sjensa. Ég vildi vera sjálfri mín nóg, sjálfstæð. En svo rekum það sig á.
I think this answer is so good. She's trying to be independent and she's trying to earn her own money and her answer is so honest. And I think a lot of people at the time were trying to do that.
Yeah. And there is a double meaning there because she says it's a sin if you don't keep in form, and she says yes, it's a sin, but of course her sin is something more. But there we have the typical situation, the Ástand, where Icelandic girls went dancing with the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Auðun, who is among the few Icelanders there and who finds this rather terrifying, all of it.
Mm-hmm. This is all very foreign to him.
Yeah.
He is quite obsessed with Guðrún there. He finds it very hard to focus on the girl that he has.
Yes, it's like we said, it's his mission to rescue her and...
Mm-hmm.
And there he gets some more information about Major Tilbury, that he's related to the royal family, that he's some that he's somehow above the laws of everybody else.
And also, he's not only rescuing her, but she is the girl of his dreams.
Yes.
And he might be losing her completely.
And she might be losing some of that innocence in his eyes as well, in the way that he sees her. She's not that innocent girl anymore.
No, obviously not.
Yeah, his memories are changing of her, or her thoughts.
Yeah, he learns that Tilbury is married in his home country. And then there is also this Freudian dilemma of what exactly is Tilbury? Is he a father figure or her son? Because the fact that she produced him makes him her son. But then, on the other hand, he has this power as a major in the army, so it's sort of mixed up.
So he's also sort of a father figure, which
yeah.
is even worse because he's the daughter of a priest.
That's true.
So she's sort of moving her loyalties also away from the church.
Yes.
And I think that is also significant. And he's from the British Army, so he's a foreign father figure.
Yes.
Nei, bittu fyrir þér. Ég talaði af mér. Þú mátt ekki segja prófastinn þetta. Satt best að segja er rangt til orða tekið að hún kíti á Tilbury sem föður sinn. Hann öllu heldur sonur hennar.
Hvað segir þú?
Já, einstæðingur, útlendingur í framandi landi, á engan að.
Heitir hann Tilbury?
Já.
They're also trying to create here a little sympathy for him, because coming here as a young man from Britain to Iceland must have been quite the culture shock. You're alone, you're away from your family, you're in a place where there are hardly any people, and your job is to stand on the shore and look out for boats every day. So that must have been a shock.
That's true. And
so in a way that she was just trying to take care of him like family.
Yes.
Yes, and there he also starts realizing the connections between the name, the English name Tilbury and the Icelandic Tilbury.
She seems to have a bad reaction to Tilbury milk.
Yeah, she seems to be allergic to it.
Mm-hmm. Tilbury is wearing quite a striking outfit here.
Yeah, I was told that this was the uniform they wore when there was a celebratory occasion. And also I heard this story about that there was an English king who was, a British king who was a kleptoman. And kleptomania was considered to be something that the nobility would do to imitate the king. We had this discussion about the English knowing how to use knives and forks, and now we see that in action.
So he's showing his status a little bit by stealing and by wearing the clothes that he's wearing.
Yes.
Here you can see the mother and son starting to dance.
Yeah, I found it interesting to mix the genre, to have a musical comedy scene in this film, which is something of a horror film. I wanted to do something surprising at this moment.
Mm-hmm. It also sort of establishes an intimate relationship between them, because they are quite synchronized in their dancing.
Yeah, that's true. And then we have this sudden change of mood.
This is how he is perceiving what is happening, right?
Yes, that's it.
And he sexualizes Guðrún quite heavily here.
Yeah, and also Tilbury, who becomes a sort of castrating father.
Mm-hmm. And he is even more monstrous here in his eyes.
Yes, it's a bit like a boy suddenly seeing his father as an enemy or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And he's followed by this ominous green glow.
Yeah.
Like the Tilbury butter.
Yeah.
This must have been, this must have required a lot of dance recitals.
Pardon me?
I said it must have required a lot of dance recitals to get this right.
Yeah, in fact, the actress was a dancer. She was not an actress. And I chose her for this scene.
So he's becoming more and more grotesque and aggressive here.
That's true.
As he becomes his victim rather than his creator.
Yes.
Now we're going back to a very odd sort of feeding scene very soon. So he stabs her with the fork that he stole.
Yes, that's how he... That's an allusion to the know how to use a knife and fork, but mm-hmm. they do everything so in a strange way. Mm-hmm. So you might think he's doing this to draw blood from her, or we don't really know what he's doing.
Yeah, his actions are always very, very foreign.
Yeah.
And always in a stark contrast to everyone else, somehow.
That's true.
This is her allergic reaction continuing.
And now the intruder is thrown out of the party.
Mm-hmm. He did not fit in. And he's being thrown in jail for the night, or a drunk tank.
And he has a bite of the Tilbury chocolate
and passes out from it.
Yeah, and then we have a sort of synopsis of what has happened, or not a synopsis, but he recollects everything that he has been thinking of.
So he's sort of putting the pieces together.
This is where he suddenly starts imagining his girlfriend as some kind of demon.
And himself as the Tilbury.
Yeah.
or one of them.
And then there is the scene at this meant to explain what has happened in a way, why everything about the Tilbury myth, most of these films, they have to have a sort of a film, a scene like that where everything is resumed in a way.
There's always a harbinger of truth.
Yeah.
But this one is quite a mixed bag as the truth bringer, because, I mean, he's clearly a Nazi.
That's true.
And might have been sort of, you know, abusing Guðrún in some way.
Yeah, that's what she said or alluded to.
Yeah. So he's forcing him to try to see this in reality, what is actually happening.
Yes. It's just like the conspiracy theorist of today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and this alludes to what has been for so many, then became for so many years a constant theme in Icelandic politics. It was about the occupational mind that so many people were making money out of the British Army and then the Americans, and then also after the war when Iceland became a member of NATO and made a special agreement with the Americans that they continued being in Iceland and were so for many decades after that.
Mm-hmm. So it's reflective of a mindset that started here and just continued for very long after that.
Yes.
He's not perhaps a character that you are very eager to sort of help out.
This Barði Kemp. No, he is also a competitor for the heart of Guðrún.
Yes. And again, he's shooed away. So now we are in Ásvallagata, where Guðrún lives. And it's night, of course.
Yes, and
this is when the ghouls and the ghosts come out. So is this building actually in Ásvallagata?
I don't think so. And the address itself, Ásvallagata exists, but not number 32.
Mm-hmm. He feels forced to break into her house rather than just call on her. Lots of chocolate everywhere.
And also old Icelandic food. It's a sort of mixture.
Mm-hmm. So that is also a fitting sort of combination of the local and the foreign.
Yes, and the old and the new, because now we see her working the wool like they used to in the old days, but surrounded by things from the war, from the soldiers.
Mm-hmm. And a beautiful sort of silk gown and...
Yeah, like she was a Hollywood star. Mm-hmm. And then we see some toys there. This is the butter. And some...
And the picture of her. Yeah. Ah, yeah, there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's her son, but he's also her father. And we saw these black candles which have a satanic connotation.
And he's sort of playing soldier in more than one way, because there's toy soldiers on the floor.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's how he discovers that this was in reality Tilbury Butter. And I found it more interesting to have her laugh at him than being shocked at being discovered, but because what she really fears is the Tilbury and not him.
Yes. His belly is full now.
Yeah.
Time for delivery.
Bringing it all back home.
This is such a grotesque scene. And it just brings home the horror of what she has actually done, I think, to gain her independence.
Yeah.
He has grown sort of a rat tail.
Yeah, or a sheep tail.
Or a sheep tail.
Yeah. Because when you see the lamb drinking milk, they always do that.
Ah.
Svo þú kannt á íslensku helvítið þitt!
She can't believe he speaks Icelandic.
But since, you know, since he has become an Icelandic ghost, it's normal that he speaks Icelandic.
Mm-hmm. So he's having a fit here like a child.
Yeah.
He does not like competition. Falls headfirst into the butter. Yes, so here we see what happens when you cross a Tilbury.
That's it, yeah.
I like the soundtrack under this scene.
Yeah, it's a bit like the nightmare he was having. Everything becomes a sort of mix up.
Mm-hmm. A dreamlike reality. Of course, in the short story, she is pregnant, and that's why he's jealous. This is very reflective of how the folklore worked.
Yes, this is something that arrives from the basic folklore story, but in a very very exciting way in many ways.
Yeah, the basic principle is still true. They don't like competition for their mother's love.
And now the Tilbury has returned to what he was originally, just a piece of wool and a rib.
Because she's passed away.
Yeah.
And he mourns the loss of this girl he couldn't save.
Yeah, and we see her. It's always the same lost innocence. This was the girl he used to know, and
now we have this shift when the Americans take over the occupation, which then wasn't called occupation, but some sort of protection.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, it is the start of the participation of the Americans in the Second World War, before Pearl Harbor.
Yes, the timing is quite phenomenal. So they're still eating butter?
Yeah, they're quoting Goebbels, who said Germany needs cannons more than butter. Mm-hmm. So it all ties up together.
Or maybe it was Goering who said so.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter.
No. And he seems more happy with the American soldiers than the British playing out there. Or is he telling them off, maybe?
Isn't the meaning that he has gone mad?
From the tragedy of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Ah, the twist ending. There he is again, throwing chocolate to the children, but now it's Hershey's chocolate.
But still, we have the impression that this is a new Tilbury arrived on the scene.
But he still seems to recognize him.
Yeah, that was...
And so the story continues to the next generation, eating the Tilbury chocolate. So we end in the barn where his sort of sexual revelation started.
Yeah, and he seems to totally regress now and disappear into, you don't know what, the womb or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that he's back at home.
He's back where he started and little has changed. He's still idealizing this woman in some way.
Yeah, this confirmation scene when he was with the young girls, they told him to lie down and now he lies totally down.
Some shadow play.
He sinks into the hay and becomes food for the cows, maybe.
He seems quite content with his fate.
Yeah.
Lying there underneath the girls. I wonder if this film has any relevance for today still, because there are some recognizable themes there.
Well, it is, we consider that the short story was published some 40 years ago, in 81, and the film is made in 87, almost 35 years ago. But I think there are many things that are still relevant today. For instance, considering Icelandic folklore, that we are more and more concerned concerned about everything Icelandic and Icelandic culture, the language and all our history. When we consider that more and more of everything that we look at on television is in English.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we in Iceland, we have a very rich folk legends because there were so few of us and we lived most of we had these very long and dark winters, and I think that the fear and the terror is a really big part of what we are. And even with modern times, with all the things that modern times have brought up, that we are constantly reminded of that we with eruption and stuff like that, that we're not really safe here.
We are small.
There are a lot of things in the dark, in nature that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are small and we are isolated, and yeah. There is something lurking in the dark.
That's it.